Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time. My guest on the pod this week is the co-founder of Phoenix International School of the Arts, which is a school that uses arts and international approach to prepare students for leadership in a global and creative world. So with that intro, I'm pleased to welcome Rike King to the show.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much, Matt, for having me. I really, really appreciate the esteemed pleasure to do your podcast today.
I appreciate you taking the time. So before we get into your journey and hear all the great work you're doing with the school, I'd love it if you could share a story about your background and maybe give us a glimpse into what little Rike was like.
Little Rike, that guy, see. Therapy has had me looking into that guy a lot more recently, but Little Rike, well, so I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. So I'm the oldest of 10 siblings, believe it or not. It's like the Black Brady Bunch, if you will. So born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. I grew up mostly on the south side of Chicago. Bounced around a lot in regards to schools and education. My mother was always, you know, very much in tune to what's happening in certain places, and she didn't want me any place that had a lot of violence going on or if the curriculum wasn't challenging enough. So literally probably every 2 years throughout my K-12 experience, I bounced around to different schools. And my last few years, actually, in my, you know, K-8 years, are actually charter schools, believe it or not. So I looked back and smiled some old yearbooks the other day. And so I actually went to like 2 or 3 charter schools. So interesting connection, wow, being that I'm starting one now. But Little Rike, I mean, he was quiet for the most part, loved music, loved Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and everything 90s babies did for the most part. Had every member of the Bulls, you know, winning team on my wall, being a Chicago native and pretty normal kid for the most part, I would assume.
Yeah. So I think the one thing that stood out to me is just being the oldest of 10 siblings. How would you say, you know, that really kind of set you on a certain trajectory, not in addition to having that many people, but just like being the oldest and feeling that responsibility for your other siblings?
It's definitely a big shaper of my life in regards to just that whole, just taking on that responsibility. Because of course, you know, being the oldest is not one of those aspects that, you know, you ever have to do, but you know, some people just step up like, oh, I guess, you know, this is my role and I'm going to do it. I'm going to try to do it as well as I can. Right. So, you know, being that, it was very, very interesting, especially how my family dynamic because made up. So as I mentioned earlier, it's kind of like the Black Brady Bunch in a sense that my parents were high school sweethearts. So they had me at like very young age at 20, like 19, 20 years old, separated because of course they were like young, right out of high school. And they both got married on separate sides of town, both got had kids in separate relationships. And then they actually divorced and they married each other and moved us all into the same household. So both my mother and father always had full custody of all their children. So when they kind of merged our families, it was like myself and then, you know, a bunch of siblings from my mother's side that was already sitting here and a bunch of siblings from my father's side that were introduced to the family. And we all kind of made it work and grew up in the same household. So I would definitely say it kind of shaped a lot for me in regards to just one, what the merger of my life kind of became, just dealing with young adults, just dealing with minors, just dealing with children on a regular basis. And of course, there just never being a dull moment in my household overall.
Again, I can only imagine. So you mentioned growing up in Chicago, and I think for good or bad, a lot of people have conceptions or perceptions, I should say, of what that could be like. And so I'm curious, how did your community really guide you and provide you with the support or views of what you could go on to do later in life?
So I'll say it guided me in a few different ways. So one, Chicago, I love Chicago to death. I would never move back there again. And that's mainly because of the winters, but I love Chicago to death. You know, it's my hometown. And I feel like it prepared me in some positive and negative ways. So positively, like I always had the community support. So being from a big family, it was always cousins, aunts, uncles around in our immediate vicinity, no matter what side of town we're on. There was always support like in our, you know, immediate area. So it's always even outside of our family, you know, friends and family members who were neighbors, but it was always support. So growing up in Black neighborhoods, you know, that culture exchange and that culture experience is there. And it's supportive. Of course, the negative side, of course, the aspect of Chicago, which most people immediately relate to, is the violence and the gang violence that happened within the city. And that was no different in the 90s growing up as well. So it's definitely an aspect of always looking over your shoulder, definitely an aspect of always making sure you and, in my case, all my siblings were safe in our vicinities when it comes to walking to and from school and all that. So I feel like it shaped me in some positive ways, of course, just to, you know, make me realize like what community looked like and felt like. And those negative ways actually propelled me to actually want to do more. So I also knew that in those aspects, this is not the feeling I want to have moving forward. this feeling of alertness and, you know, always being like on edge in certain areas or in certain neighborhoods, it's not something I wanted. So it always kind of propelled me to want to know what else was out there. What does this next step look like for me? And what is life outside of Chicago? So I knew from a very young age, like I wanted to leave this place and see like what everything else had to offer me in the general vicinity. And at that time, it was just, you know, the next city or the next the next state over, maybe. It wasn't like the rest of the world. It wasn't kind of developed in my mind just yet, but it was definitely like, what else is out there? Because I know this cannot be it.
So before we got on, you shared that you had the opportunity in your undergrad to go abroad and how that was a very pivotal moment for you and almost acted as a springboard of sorts in your life. So I'm curious if you could share a little bit of how that was a springboard for you.
Oh yeah, it was a huge, huge springboard. So I would say even before that, the first springboard was definitely my leaving away to college. So the first 2 years of college, I actually attended Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, that was the furthest at that point I have probably been away from home. I know when it came to applying to colleges, I got accepted to a number of state colleges and local colleges. But as soon as I got a letter from somewhere that was outside of the vicinity of Illinois, that's the first place I applied to. My parents were actually on vacation when I sent my acceptance letter back. I was like, hey, so Clark accepted me. So I already sent the letter back. I said, I'm going. And he was like, well, we didn't discuss this. I was like, well, I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm going. So I don't know what the money thing is. I don't know what's happening, but that's the furthest place away, and that's exactly where I'm going. So I would definitely say that was like, well, a huge springboard for me just like wanting to kind of advance and wanting to kind of jump to something new. And then lo and behold, when I actually got to Clark and, you know, had an amazing time, love all my friends, still all my close friends from Clark Atlanta University. One of my closest friends, she actually introduced me to, she let me know that she was applying to study abroad in Spain for the summer, like during our sophomore year. And I had no clue what studying abroad was, what it took, what the process was or anything. I just said, hey, sign me up. I don't know how we do this, but much like my leap to go to college and go away to college, it's like, oh, well, sign me up. Let's see what this is. Let's see where we're going. And I'm down for it. So she literally sent me the application. I completed the application with her, turned the application in, got accepted. And much like my college acceptance, I let my parents know before I came home for the summer that year, like, hey, I just got accepted to study abroad in Spain. I'm supposed to be flying to Spain in about 2 weeks. And they were like, okay, what and what are we doing and how are we getting this done? And what is this process? We have no clue what you're talking about. We just don't understand what you're saying. So with that, it was like one of those definitely like springboard moments when I got to study abroad that entire summer. And we were based in Barcelona, but we got to travel all over Spain. So to Madrid and Pamplona, Seville, got to run with the Bulls. So like crazy, crazy, crazy life moments, just mind-blowing experiences the entire time. And that entire process just came about because I was just curious. So someone let me know of an opportunity that I did not know about previously. My parents, of course, did not have the financial funds at the time to kind of ensure that I got there. So when I actually returned home, I sold my first car that I literally just got the semester before. I sold my first car and bought a round trip ticket to Spain. And that's just how the process went with me getting over there.
Yeah. So when you came back, how do you feel your community received your experience, and how did they think about the fact that you had just spent this time and again, what it was a foreign nation to probably everyone that you were coming back to?
I would definitely say when I returned, I wasn't greeted with the response that I thought I was going to be greeted with. So in my mind, I had just had this amazing experience. It's like life-changing experience, this experience that I didn't realize until later, like really changed the trajectory of like what I wanted to do and what my future would look like. So I came back like just on energy, on like off the charts in regards, just wanted to tell everybody what I did, what I saw, showing them pictures. So at this point, Facebook was like, you know, probably 2-3 years in. So we had all our pictures on Facebook, and I was just like, you know, showing family members and cousins and my neighborhood friends. And the reactions I was met with oftentimes was like, oh, well, why did you do that? You could have got hurt, or this could have been dangerous. Or, what were you doing over there? Or, people don't do that. Or the famous quote, oh, that's white people stuff. So it's like, well, what does any of that mean? I don't really understand. I just had an amazing time. Like, it was great. I learned some Catalan. It was like Spanish mixed with French in regards to language I was learning abroad. And, you know, met up some amazing people from all over the world. Like, literally every time we went out somewhere, we met someone from Paris or Morocco. It was just like all these other teens and young adults, and they speak multiple languages. And I'm like, yeah, I only speak English, but hey, I'm here. We can figure this out and have some fun regardless. But either way, it was like one of those experiences, like I returned home, just like really, really energy on like on a million. But what I was met with in my neighborhood was like really the opposite. And I noticed later is because they just cannot fathom what that looked like, you know, leaving their zip code or leaving the city or leaving the walls that they were confined to it was like, so their energy immediately was like, you know, kind of a downpour of my parade in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out what that was for the longest period of time.
Yeah. So how did you continue to feed that curiosity and that wanting to kind of see new places and learn new things? Like, what did you do after that?
Oh, after that, it was like no stopping me. And whenever I got the opportunity to go somewhere else or somewhere different, I was gone. So as my friends would call me, I'm the expert like trip planner. So I'm the one who like, hey, guys, we're going here. We're going for this long. Here's what you need to bring. Here's what you need to lay out. Here's the days. Here's the weather over there. Here's the time zone. Like literally laying out every detail of the trip. I'm that guy in the friend group. So from the moment after I got from return from abroad, like anytime I got my hands on any kind of money, I didn't buy clothes. I didn't buy shoes. I bought plane tickets. If I had a college friend in a different town, like, hey, where you live? I'm in New York. I want to come visit. Can I come crash on your couch? Sure. All right. I'm buying a plane ticket. Friend who lives in LA. Hey, I want to come visit. All right. I'm coming. Can I stay on your couch? Got it. So anytime I got any kind of income, whether it be through work or any of my summer jobs or anything from financial aid, refund checks, like from that moment on, I literally like used that to go travel or go to somewhere else. And for the most part, it was always confined within the U.S. But one of the aspects with education, which I feel like was such important to me throughout my progress, was I felt like education was attached to my travel. So the two times at that moment when I have gone outside the U.S., it had been attached to education. And with that, I was like, oh, so this is my way to continue doing this. So it's actually kind of what I used to fuel me to kind of get other places. Most of the time when I traveled in those early years, it was literally always attached to education. So even with me moving to California, you know, I ended up going to Pepperdine University for my master's degree. And it's like, all right, so I get to go somewhere new. So attached to education. And within the programs that I've kind of done thus far, they've always been attached to some kind of experience so I can go abroad or kind of experience something outside of whatever the norm is within the program.
Yeah, what I love about that is like the duality of education, because obviously there's the curriculum that you're going through when you attend these programs and you're a part of these schools, but there's also the, as you subject yourself to a new environment, you have to learn and you have to understand like, what are the norms here? What is, you know, what do these people like and how do I fit in? How do I find commonality? So it's like the duality of how you're educating yourself isn't just limited to the degree that you're going to receive, but also to those life experiences that you're chasing. So that's great.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I feel like it's a direct correlation to your previous question in regards to how my community prepared me for that. And, you know, with my early years and, of course, even with bouncing around the schools, I had already kind of built that muscle of like going into a new environment every 1 or 2 years. So whether it's a new school, whether it's a new environment because we're moving, because, you know, violence might have arose in this area, X on the other. And it's like, you know, my parents' key goal was, of course, safety. So like every time we kind of went to a new space, it's a new school. It's like, oh, well, I'm starting over again. So let's do this thing. So, and I feel like I kind of took that same kind of, you know, muscle that I built within my community growing up in Chicago and use that wherever I went. So just went into those new spaces like, hey, I've done this before. I can do it again wherever I kind of set up shop. So,
yeah. Well, I want to jump into your professional journey and like when you actually start using a lot of these lessons to impact a large groups of people and organizations. So I have to start with like, where the hell does the idea to start a school come from?
So interesting enough, it's, I don't know how I got here either. I would say absolutely for a fact, it was not like starting a school was not like, oh, my, any of my like, in, like furthest like dreams of like opening up something. I knew I always wanted to work myself. I knew I always wanted to kind of start something. And I feel like the urge to kind of, you know, be that entrepreneur, the urge to kind of, you know, be the person to get things going started. Much when I was in my, it started when I was in graduate school when I was in Los Angeles, because I, you know, did like what everybody told me to do. You know, I'm a part of that generation. It's like, go to school, get a good job, and, you know, do what you're supposed to. And I did exactly that. Graduated undergrad, you know, went to California and started my graduate program there and then started working at a corporate job. So I was working at a hospital in Los Angeles for about three and a half years. And I mean, standard desk job, answering phones, emails, like, in the box, literally. And that was my life. And it became so miserable at some point. I was just like, what is happening? Like, what is going on? This is really driving me insane. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. This is not connected to anything I love. I love to travel. I love education. And I love to kind of, you know, mentor youth and others. That's what I've always been doing in some fashion or another. Of course, I always want to kind of stay away from children, considering I have 9 siblings. I was, even when I, in my psychology career, I was like, I'm not doing therapy with children. I'm only doing adults. I was like, stay away from youth. And the first job I had when it comes to the therapy space was literally at a teen center. So I was like, oh, how do I keep ending up around kids? I guess this is my thing that I need to swallow this pill, because obviously I'm supposed to be doing it. But throughout that process, I really kind of start to tune in with myself, like, hey, what is it that I like and what is it I want to kind of, you know, do? So I know I want to leave a mark. I know I want to do something and that I can take back to Chicago for those neighborhoods there and kind of change that trajectory of, you know, those youth who I return, when I returned home, felt like, you know, what I did was beyond any of their future experiences or what they can ever do. So with that, I really just kind of continue to kind of dive into what my purpose could be. And that led me to starting the Now Boarding Corporation. So it's actually like the first nonprofit organization that I started back in 2015. And the sole purpose of that organization was to promote studying abroad and second language acquisition against for minority males. So I work with a lot of teenage males. We sponsored their first passports. Just I took them on different tours throughout the city to let them know what different neighborhoods look like and things of that nature. And that connection actually led me into this actually school, believe it or not. So I always knew I wanted to make an impact. And at the time, my vision was just like, you know, to impact as many, you know, young Black males as I can, to ensure that they can study abroad, to ensure they get their passports as young as possible, to ensure that they're going to get out of the neighborhoods that they're in, to realize like, hey, there's other things out there. And I want you that light bulb to go off when you get off that plane to be like, oh, this is what Rakay was talking about the whole time. So I always want that light bulb to go off. And that was like, as far as like, you know, my mind reached at that point. And it wasn't until a few years ago when a friend of mine who was in the same international education space reached out to me. She's actually from Charles County, Angelica Jackson. And she had an organization similar to mine just on the East Coast for youth in her neighborhood to ensure they get abroad and things of that nature. She was getting passports for them and planning trips as well, much like I was doing with Now Boarding. And I left California about 3-4 years ago in 2018. And literally 3 to 4 weeks after I got here, she messaged me on LinkedIn like, hey, we haven't chatted in a while, but I wanted to kind of talk to you. Basically, I want to know how much I have to pay you to get you to come to the DMV area and open up a school with me. And I'm just like, what? All those things sounded crazy because when I just moved here. So did you know I'm here and you're like playing with me? To a school? Who does that? What do you mean a school? Like, I don't, and why me? Like, I don't, what are you talking about? So I'm like, all right. So I met with her and she kind of told me her vision and idea, like, hey, I want to start a school in Charles County, Maryland. I want to start an art school. I have an arts background. I always had a passion in the arts. And I know you're deep into international education. I know you're deep into mental health and holistic wellness with your 2 psych degrees. And when I thought about starting this organization, there's no other person I thought who would be great at making sure this gets off the ground. Because I've seen the work you've done before. And I really, really, really want you to kind of be the one who helps me get this school off the ground. And that literally led from one thing to another. I agreed like a few days later and said, all right. At the time, it still sounded extremely crazy to me, starting a school. Like, I don't, you can't really like fathom that trajectory, how that's going to start. It's like, you know, like every aspect of starting a school, like, yeah, we're doing that. So, and that really just kind of led me to that, this step of like opening our school and we're all set to open fall of next year. So I would say all those kind of things, it wasn't on my trajectory, but it's just funny how things actually work out in regards to, I was, you know, concentrating on, you know, this small group of youth I want to influence in different little states and cities. Yeah. And now I'm on a trajectory to influence generations of youth for like a lifelong trajectory. And it's just crazy how like, you know, sometimes you just don't let your brain go as far as you think it could go. And that's kind of what happened with this starting of Pesoto.
So what's great about that is I see the parallels between you jumping into this experience and how you jumped into going to, you know, Atlanta, how you jumped into going abroad. You're like, I don't know how this is going to work, but I know that I'm going to learn something, or I know I'm going to figure something out. So it's great to hear that consistency and also to see how big it's getting. Because at first it was just your college experience. Then it was like your life experience. And now it's like you said, future generations of youth. Like it's just the consistency, yet the impact growing is really impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we're trying to, that's the goal over here.
So you touched on this with, you know, when you started the Now Boarding Corporation and really focused in on helping Black males get their passports and be ready to go experience the world. But I'm curious, like, I see that it is a key and it's almost like you gave them the key to open doors that they didn't know were out there. Can you just share like a story or just what was the impact that you had on those young men through doing that type of effort?
Yeah. So lots of stories, those young men. Like, I remember the first cohort of young men I worked with in Los Angeles. So it was a few young men who were all over, they went to high schools and all over Los Angeles. And we pulled them together. They were in a few different programs, like assistant programs, just after school programs throughout the city. And we were in partnership with UCLA and USC. So we actually were able to go on their campuses for our meetings. And one of the first things that was just so interesting, because here in my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm ready to kind of show them the world. And it's right. Like go abroad and see the Eiffel Tower and all these kind of things. And I remember having to kind of step back a bit because we took them to one place on USC's campus. And they were just like, blown away. These are like 15, 16, 17 year olds. And they're like, just the campus alone, they was like, wow. Like, and I was like, oh my God. I'm like all the way trying to get them like to Paris and London and everywhere else. And they're like just doorsteps, like, you know, probably a few miles away from the actual home. And like, wow, this is like amazing to them. They're seeing, you know, different races and cultures and diverse groups that they have never interacted with before. They're seeing these large buildings and they're seeing like this huge football team and all these kind of things. They're like, oh, this is like amazing. And I'm like, I have to step back and think that, oh, I have some baby steps to do. Cause I'm like, of course I want to get them to this place and we're going to get there. But it was just so amazing to me how the impact of just like even the things in your own backyard could be impactful. And of course, the goal was still to make sure we got, you know, as further as possible so they see what that opening was and those different pathways. But just those little baby steps that they, you know, were confined to within our neighborhood that they didn't even get to experience. So with that, one of the key things that we did is I got them like a fake little passport. So it's like a little passport cover and they get to go around and they get like stamps around the campus. So like each campus area they went into, I talked to a few partners, like the study abroad office and the cafeteria and things like that. And they actually had to go get stamps so they can see what it'd be like traveling to different places. So they got stamps from each little organization. So they like run around campus trying to get stamps from everyone they could get stamps from and seeing who can get their stamp book filled up the quickest as a trajectory of like what it could be like when you're actually bouncing around from country to country. And that was like one of the most like amazing experiences for me, just to see like their faces like light up and with these experiences, because they're like, oh my God, this is so fun. Like, this is what it's like. And they're just seeing things within their own backyards. So I'm like, imagine what it's like when you get off this airplane and when we finally get to that point and things of that nature. So it's like, that was like one of the early on experiences I really remember that was just like extremely impactful, because it made me want to take a step back to realize, oh, one doesn't have to be as grand as I am making this out to be, and we can definitely get there. But there are some steps along the way that we can do right here without the initial funding that we were aiming for. So it was like really great to have that kind of impact with those youth in that moment.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So when I was in LA for about 8 years and participated in a few programs working with high school, middle school aged kids. And to your point about, they don't have the exposure to things that are literally miles away. Mm-hmm. Like, I was amazed by how many hadn't even been to the beach. Mm-hmm. And you just think about like, look at a map and it is no more than 4 or 5 miles from their home, and mm-hmm. they have never ventured into those spaces. And so the fact that you were able to do it in the baby steps, but still to change the wiring of how they view the world, I'm sure that those implications are still being played out as they, you know, go through later school and go on to do many great things. So I want to switch to the brand of Riquet for a bit. What would you say is your superpower?
My superpower. When I think about my superpower, and again, I feel like there's never a good answer to this question. Like, when I think about my superpower, I think about is like, I always think about things in forms of a map. So I think about people like has a like a map in their like plan, their vision. They see like in their brain, like you have a map of like where everything is laid out. And oftentimes, you know, that map is not the full extent, because there's a picture of that map that you can't see yet. It's like that shaded out part that's like a little over there that you haven't got to yet. So I see myself as like, my superpower is like, you know, shining lights in those other areas, those dark areas that you have no clues on the other side. So really like shining light on those paths that you probably wouldn't have crossed by yourself, and really like opening like, you know, your eyes and opening experience, especially when it comes to youth, like opening the experience to what's on the other side. So this side that they might think that is, you know, unavailable to them because of who they are, where they're from, or their financial situation. I really see myself as, you know, that person who can shine light on those different paths that might be out of reach to them.
Yeah. That is one, an amazing gift to have, but also I'm just thinking about like an actual superpower, like a superhero doing that, coming in and like showing you a shiny light. Like it'd be a pretty cool one. Have you had a "Mama, we made it" moment?
For me personally, I would say no. But if you ask my actual mother or anybody who knows me, they would say I probably had several. So me, I feel like, you know, I feel like that's still coming. To me personally, I feel like my mama, you made him. I feel like that's still coming. I feel like I'm still like, you know, really, really in the grinds and still really in the work to like get things going, and a lot of ideas and a lot of things we want to get off the ground when it comes to the school and who we want to impact and our trajectory and partner with. But I feel like I haven't had it yet in my eyes. But of course, if you ask my actual mother or siblings, it would be traveling to multiple countries. It would be starting now boarding. It would be, you know, I launched my actual nonprofit Nickelodeon Studios. So I had a great partnership with them. So I got to fly my mother and all of them out there, and they kind of walked in Nickelodeon Studios just like, wow, this is where you're launching your event at. So it was like one of those things with them. It's like, oh my God, this is amazing. But for me, I was just like, you know, literally just doing the work And of course, like, I guess starting an actual school, so getting approved for that last April, I guess for my mother, you know, my parents and everybody, they were like, we're like, oh, wow, this is, you're like starting a school. So even now, when I mention to friends, they're like, you say it so cavalier, like you're starting a school. I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's, right now I'm doing the work. I'm doing the thing. So it's like, I don't like see the, I guess I see the end result, but I don't like feel like it's like, you know, there until it's like there yet. Yeah. So when we get those doors open and students walk in and all that kind of stuff, maybe I'll feel differently. But for me, I feel like there's some more things to, before I'm like, yeah, this is it.
Yeah, I definitely could see, because you mentioned your mom really prioritized education. Mm-hmm. And so for that to find itself matriculating into you actually starting a school, I'm sure that's on that list, you know, for her and you know, obviously for you, because she's so proud of it.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to close out and hopefully you have a little bit of fun. So when they turn your life story into a movie, and they have this story of 10 kids and the oldest as the leader of that group, who would you want to play you on the big screen?
That's a good question. There's a lot of people I love in an acting environment, but all right. So if I had to think about the person to play me, thinking about like different temperaments and who can show those good and bad moments overall, I'll probably say Terrence Howard. So it's some, you know, visible things that looks, we might look similar, but also like, I feel like he can play those like grimy moments. I'm like not at my best, but also those moments when everything is going perfectly well. And I'll definitely like someone who can like, you know, show that duality, like, hey, yeah, things have been nice, but there are some moments that were not great. And there was, you know, down and hard and out times as well. And I would definitely like that kind of display. I hate it to just be like some like, oh, he's great and did all this story. I definitely won't love that parallel display. I think he'll do a good job of that.
Yeah, he definitely has that range.
Yeah,
to pull off both sides. So what song would play in the trailer?
So I'm a huge music head, but right now I cannot get anything out of my brain besides Renaissance. Beyonce's new album, Renaissance. Yep. So the song that's probably come to mind first would definitely have to be Cozy. Okay. So, yeah, off that album right now, it's just like on repeat in my head. I can't escape it. I can't not listen to it in the gym. It's just like, it just won't go away. So right now, that's the song choice would definitely be Cozy.
There you go. So I'm a huge fan of stories. It's why I do the podcast. I just enjoy listening to someone share their unique experience and be able to learn from them. But for you, if you could have a conversation with three people, they could be with us, they could have passed, to learn from their firsthand story, who would be your three?
It's a good question. So my first would be my nanny. So my great grandmother. So we all call her nanny. She was on my mother's side, the first one to actually migrate from the South up to Chicago. So, you know, doing that great migration from the South up into the Midwest. And one of my favorite people growing up as well. But of course, growing up, you know, people, you know, your parents and grandparents in a certain level, you don't like know them. So she passed some years ago, and I really wish that I would have got the opportunity to kind of dive into her as an individual, like her outside of being our great-grandmother and the matriarch of the family, like outside of all that, like her as an individual, like what caused her to like leave the South? What was the final straw for her? Like what caused her to say she would never return to Little Rock, Arkansas? Like what were those moments leading up to that? Like what is the bravery that took for her to like get up and leave her family behind and say, hey, I'm going to start anew in Chicago. And I don't know who's there. She may have one or two relatives here, but I'm going to start doing a whole different place, especially in that time period where it's like, you know, it's not easy, especially as a woman, to like literally like pick up and leave and go with your kids and go somewhere else and start anew. So it's like, I'm just wondering what that like mindset and that mentality could have been like in a time period to say, hey, I'm leaving this current environment and going to start somewhere. I have no clue what the other side of this can be, but I just know that I'm getting out of here. And I feel like there's a lot of parallels that I've had growing up as well, or just like existing as well. So I really love to see like, you know, where she's in line with that. Next person would be James Baldwin. So a favorite of mine. And one of the reasons I would say James Baldwin definitely is because he's one of those individuals, you know, as a Black gay man, he actually like left. So, you know, he left this, he moved away, he, you know, visited other countries in a time period where that wasn't, you know, common. It wasn't common for people of our who look like us to actually, you know, go abroad and like, set up shop abroad and, you know, make friends and a life for themselves abroad. So just having that kind of, you know, go-to attitude to say, I don't have to actually be or stay here in this situation. I'm going to go see what else is out there and actually find something else that's more positive than your current situation. So I kind of love to kind of chat with him, just bring that back up and see what that journey was like. And the third would be, I'll say Barack Obama. I'd definitely say Barack Obama. And it's definitely like surrounded, of course, just like, you know, I just couldn't imagine what that process was like, you know, transitioning to like the president of the United States. And not only that, considering the history of this country, which is also being the representative for like the entire nation. So going to travel and meet people abroad and seeing like this person who's not a white male for the first time representing this country, like what were those interactions like? Like which were the positives and the negatives, which I'm sure we don't know about, but I really would like to dive into like what were those reactions like? What was the reactions from others? Well, the positive ones and the negative ones. And how did you maintain your cool for 8 years in front of the public eye? Because I probably would not have been able to do it as smoothly. I would try, but it probably would not be as smoothly done. So yeah, those would definitely be my three if I can kind of do a wrap up chat with today.
Yeah, that's a great client. The funny thing is, I don't think you said the words, and I haven't said the words yet, but you're definitely a trailblazer and like literally blazing new trails in new spaces. And you picked three people that were trailblazers. So I think that, again, that consistency is something that's really impressive as I'm listening and hearing you walk through your reasons why. So is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share? Or anything you want to ask
me? I think one question was like, what made me so interesting as a person to do a podcast on? I feel like a podcast can be like such an intimate moment, such a like, you know, a grand thing when it comes to individuals who dive into this space. And I was really honored to kind of get the opportunity. It was like also that moment of like, what do I mean? What do I do? I mean, the school thing, of course, it's huge. I think I need to start accepting that. But it's like,
So we were connected through a colleague of mine, Freddie Covington, and she had nothing but great things to say about you and you guys being classmates and kind of the experiences that you have had and also the experiences you're creating. And so for me, anytime someone in my network shares someone that they feel is one, inspirational, two, has a story, I'm always willing to have that conversation because, you know, the podcast is, again, it's selfishly a way for me to learn from all the great people doing many great things. And I'm really fascinated when it falls outside of my capacity or my capabilities. And so if you asked me to start a school, that work would not get done. I would not know where to go. I would not know who to call. I would not know where to start. I'd probably sit looking at a blank Google document for a very long time after Googling how to start a school. And so to me, yes, you are going to have to accept that is a big deal. And that is something that is going to change so many lives. But I also just think hearing how you've gone about your life is one that's inspirational. And so for me, being able to learn from that and also hopefully to share it with others, that's where it becomes a no-brainer that we definitely had to have this conversation, put it on the internet, make sure everybody hears it. So
thank you. I definitely appreciate it. And now you know me, so if you do want to start a school, I can send you about 50 Google documents for you to go through. You can make that decision.
yeah, that one is probably not gonna make the top list of all the things I have up coming up, but I appreciate that. But before I let you go, if people want to get to know more about what you're up to, they want to follow along with the school, how can I connect them? Where should I send them?
Absolutely. So you can definitely go directly to our website. It's www.pisota.org. So that's spelled PISOTA.org. It's the same thing for our social media handles. So we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So definitely give us a follow. We're currently in a big push to, you know, this is our year zero. We're opening up in fall 2023. Our enrollment is opening up next month. So we're getting ready. So if you do have youth and you do know anybody in Charles County, Maryland, interested in a new school choice. So we're definitely looking to kind of pull in all those students who want to get that arts background, who wants to be attached to international education. So you can follow us on all those sites to get more information about us. Of course, being a new school, we're looking for a new principal, looking for a director of ops. We're looking for a teacher soon. So if you're in the area, you know anybody looking to relocate in the DMV, definitely spread the word as much as possible and help us get our, you know, Arts Innovation Lab off the ground along with our new school building. So we can definitely connect in any way possible. And you can definitely email us as well. So hello@pisota.org is our email address if you want any general questions or to get in touch with me at any point.
Awesome. I'll include all those links and I'm sure people will be checking you guys out and following along on the journey.
But again,
appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story. It's definitely been great to learn from you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time and choosing me, of course, for this process. I really, really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed hearing Rickey's story and just being exposed to his energy. You could hear it just bubbling out of him. He just has so much great energy and I definitely can see how he's been able to apply that to make a difference in so many people's lives. But the three things that I took away from him sharing his story is one, he always felt like he could follow his curiosity, and he maybe didn't know where it was going to take him. He maybe didn't know how, you know, once he set that goal, how he was going to get there, but he followed it nonetheless. And I think there's something interesting there about letting your curiosity take you into spaces that you may not be comfortable in, or you may not know what's on the other side of that map. As he talked about, you know, uncovering the map for folks. I think there's just something in there that, especially those of us that are still trying to figure out what journey and what path we're going to take, just letting your curiosity really, really guide you when you don't know necessarily which direction to go. The second thing is, he was always the first in his community, in his grouping, you know, with those that he was partnering with, to go outside of his comfort zone. And every time he went out of his comfort zone, it opened up a new world for him. So he talked about that with going to Clark Atlanta and going far away from home in Chicago, and then secondarily going abroad, and then, you know, going forward, all these other great experiences and endeavors he's gotten into, all the way up to now starting a school. And he has always been the leader to go into that. And I think that a lot of times it's easier to follow someone outside of your comfort zone because you feel like, you know, that leader's guiding you. But being the first is very difficult. And so I think if there's opportunities for us to be the first in our own lives, there's definitely something to take away from his story. And then lastly, and we talked about this, how his impact has grown over time, but just not underestimating the impact that you're making in other people's lives. And I love the story that he shared about taking the kids to USC's campus and just opening their eyes to what was on the campus that was literally miles away from them, is, you know, directly in their backyard, and not underestimating the impact of that. And I know he had bigger ideas of wanting them to go to London and Paris, but I think we can sometimes focus on the big, lofty goal and not understand how some of those initial smaller steps can still have such a crucial impact in driving towards the ultimate goals that we want to have. So I think it's just a really, really important reminder to not underestimate the impact that you could be having by taking that first step versus the 10th or the 11th step. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.